Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Stuart, and nice to meet you. I had not met you before, but you seem very professional.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes, folks, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now, if you have questions, concerns, or comments about what this heat's doing to your landscape, 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. It is Saturday morning. We get together and have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard. How about that front yard? Oh, it's facing west. Yeah. No trees, no shade. How about the side landscape, especially garden space, a taste of the tropics? Your house plants, how are they doing? What is a potting mix versus a potting soil? How do you improve your soil, and should you be doing it in this heat? How about bugs? Are they out there? You better be careful. They may be doing some damage. And hopefully the information I share with you will help you orchestrate the best and solidify your options, with the final judgment of any action taken is going to be on your shoulders. By the way, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is James. He's over there. He's producing, back for a short period of time, I guess. And he produces, meaning he answers the phone. He just needs your first name, not what you're calling about or anything else. So first name, that's pretty much it. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. That was in the last century. Oh, my goodness. I can come to your home doing landscape consultations, which I call walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get going on this stroll. It's brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Oh, the sun was so bright. I stepped out of our home, air conditioned, of course, and just like, whoa, bright sun and wow, pretty warm feeling. I drove not too far away from our house. There's massive trees. There's the Mississippi River Valley. Wow, I was surprised at some of the how low the water is even on the Mississippi. There's a crazy wild entanglement of all kinds of different kinds of plants, everything from wild grapes to mimosa trees, which is in bloom right now. There's a wrought iron fence, which is on the east side of this particular building, and it provides a vista point to the east. And it's really kind of, this building is really kind of neat. It has arched architecture, structural qualities, and things like that. On the west side, it's basically spiced with marigolds, dianthus, and a little bit more. There's a poster there that lists all the Carondelet concerts in various parks. There's three different parks that have, you know, concerts. And there's a walkway that leads south past the Milkweed for Monarchs planting with an informational sign. There's an informational sign, too, a pretty old historic one. It's out of metal. And it tells the history of Carondelet, which started in 1767. This area is now called Bell Reef Park. It has a playground. It has ginkgo trees. It has benches. It has oak trees. It has elms and river birches. It's got all kinds of birds and squirrels and everything else. And early in the morning, there's still a few, you know, there's some people out because of, I'm assuming, the heat, but maybe they just get up early anyway. The lawn is a nice mixture of green. I'm not saying it's grass, but anyway, it's green. And the high point of this warm, humid morning was this. It was just a delightful area for all comers. There was a pair of walkers as I was just getting ready to leave that I said hello to. And It looked like they were kind of, this is part of their routine. But anyway, it was just a nice morning to be in the outdoors in Belle Reve Park, which is where Broadway and Bates kind of run into each other. And it's really a really nice historic area. It's kind of wild and crazy. So if you'd like to just sit in a bench and watch who knows what, bird-wise, squirrel-wise, or just be quiet and just kind of listen. Anyway, Mike Miller, KM Morse Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Connect with KMOX on air, online. 1120 AM, 98.7 FM, KMOX.com.
James pushes this button to let me know to go on air, and it's red lighted. I couldn't see it, so I had to maneuver some stuff around on this table that I'm broadcasting from. But anyway, let's start off with Scott. Scott, how are you today?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
So I was wondering, we have a friend of ours who has some large hostas, and I was wondering, is now a good time to split those and move them, or should we wait?
Yeah, you should wait. It's a little bit premature. You could do it, but it's not to the advantage of the plant material. And probably any time after mid to late August through the entire month of September would be the better time.
Okay. So when it starts getting cooler, I guess?
Yeah, well, not only that, it's you don't want to be out there working yourself, but it's just, you know, that's a better time. The ground is warm still, and that will trigger some root system growth from the, you know, the transplants and everything else, or the divisions. And it's just a more opportune time to do it. You can do it now. It's just not to the advantage of the plant material. It's not going to make them any better. It's going to possibly cause some grief because we don't know what our weather's going to be. And even if you're doing additional watering, the plants that have been transplanted or divided, the root system has been damaged. So just wait until things are a little bit calmer.
Okay. Same with aerating and seeding for your lawn?
If you're talking cool season lawn, definitely don't do that this time of year. But you could really create some real problems for bluegrass or for fescues to core aerate this time of year. And so wait on that till, basically the same time frame, and even a little bit later you can do it. You can do it from, let's say, late August all the way through kind of Halloween.
Okay. Great. Thanks so much for the info.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I've had blackberries for quite a few years, and this year I noticed little bagworms, and sometimes they're on the leaf, and sometimes they're on the fruit itself, and they don't look like a bagworm that I've seen on shrubs. They're quite a bit smaller, and I was wondering if you've ever encountered that, and are they lost, or can I expect them back next year?
To be honest with you, I don't know the exact insect you're speaking of. But are they causing any kind of damage?
Not really. And I've only found 7 or 8.
Okay.
And they're a small variety, and I didn't, they look like, but they're definitely a bagworm or a subtype.
Okay.
But I've had blackberries as long as I remember. I've never seen them before.
So what are you doing? Are you just picking them off?
I'm just hand picking them. I've only found a few, but I was wondering if you've ever encountered that. I really don't want to spray anything. I know you got to hand pick them, but I was wondering if I can expect them back next year, or are they just, have you ever seen it?
No, I really haven't, not on blackberries. That's something totally new to me. So, sometime in the next few days, I'll take a look and see what they possibly could be, because I don't, that's a new one completely.
Yeah, and I've had blackberries as long as I remember. I've never seen them. So. Okay.
Shows you the world is changing.
So. it's very diverse.
Yes.
All right.
Great.
Thank you for your program.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Keith's yard. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I kept the tag to a rose that my wife got a couple years ago, Mother's Day. It's a David Austin rose. and it's a Princess Anne. And in the description, it says long flowering season. Well, we got one flush early on, and it hasn't. It's starting to push new leaves out right now, but I don't see any buds. We fertilized it when it was blooming. The leaves have got a lot of small holes in it. It only gets about 4 to 6 hours of direct sunlight. Should I just hang in there and see if it flowers again? Am I doing something wrong? What about transplanting it?
I would say the David Austin roses, just in general, don't like it here all that well. You know, they're just a hybrid, and they seem to not. If you would go to, let's say, the botanical garden, you're not going to see too many David Austin roses there growing in either one of the rose gardens, and it's just because they they're more towards a southern exposure. And then the situation with you with just that amount of sun, that's going to be impactful. And as far as I'm assuming you're fertilizing with rose food, and so it's just it's just not the ideal circumstance. And you can keep it because of historic value that your wife has for it, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot out of it. Even if you transplant it to a fully sunny location, it probably should do better than it's going to do where you have it right now. But consequently, it's still going to be problematic. And as far as the holes on the leaves, the roses just in general, they're really somewhat problematic. Hopefully it's not Japanese beetles, but, who knows?
Oh, I had lots of Japanese beetles. They seem to finally ran their cycle this year. I got two traps up.
Oh,
and
really?
They were just, still infesting my green beans. So I just kept spraying them with malathion, and they're not there anymore. So I guess they're done in my yard for the season, hopefully.
Well, just keep an eye out.
I will. I've learned how to grow potatoes in buckets.
Whoa.
Now, the only thing, I learned it from a YouTube site, and I got like 6 or 8 buckets. The first ones that I harvested, they had like a colander full of potatoes, a couple of large ones, some small ones. But the rest of them, as soon as the bloom pops out, it disappears. It almost looks like only the bloom has been eaten. And the other two that I've harvested so far, they either had no potatoes or 1 or 2 potatoes. Could it have anything to do with the bloom being eaten or whatever the heck is happening to it?
Well, the bloom really doesn't do anything in relationship to the potato. The potato is part of the root system. So a flower is just sort of like, let's say, an embellishment more so than anything else. But anyway, so I would say maybe just trying to grow them, even though you saw somebody doing it and blah, 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 on YouTube or wherever it was that you saw, success is going to be somewhat limited.
Okay, well, I was just wondering why the very first one that I harvested, they had a lot of potatoes, and I had a lot of hopes, and then all of a sudden, they got crushed.
And it could be related to the weather. It could be related to several different factors. And, I don't know, what type of seed potato did you plant?
Well, I planted both Yukon and Red.
Okay. So probably Yukon is going to have a little bit tougher time here. The Red should be okay. That should be your better one. So was the one that you got the good production, was that a Red or was that a Yukon?
That was a Yukon.
Oh, really?
One.
All right.
And then the other three Yukon didn't do well. I haven't harvested a Red one yet.
Okay.
Because they were planted about a month and a half, 2 months later.
So that may mean the Yukons are earlier producers, and then as the season goes on, if it gets too warm, and particularly the soil is going to be very warm in a bucket circumstance or any kind of container, that could have an impact on the tubers forming on the root system.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to John Jard. Hi, John.
Mike.
Hi.
You there?
Yes.
Hey, so I'm sure you've answered this question 100 times, but I've got several bare spots in my lawn that I'm trying to grow some grass in, and I know that like September is the best time, but some of the areas are out front, and I didn't want to wait that long. So two or three areas I'm having reasonable success, and what I did in all areas was raked up the ground, the soil, to loosen it up a little bit, and then I put my seed down and water it twice a day, about 30 minutes before I go to work and 30 minutes when I get home. But there's a stubborn area, and I've done this twice over the course of the past month, because especially I did first time around, I didn't have any luck, and I don't think I watered it enough. But out front, I've got hardly any new growth coming in. But this area is a little bit sloped down to the culvert in front and near the street, probably slopes down about 4 feet at about a 30-degree angle. And it probably gets sun, I'll say, about three-fourths of the day. Like, it's still shady right now, but within the next hour or two, it'll be sunny probably, you know, till late afternoon. So, oh, and I did also, first round, I just loosened up the soil. Second round, I loosened it up, and I put down some, bought a bag of topsoil to put down over it. Still poor results. So any ideas to improve my results?
You know, doing seed this time of year, I'm assuming you're talking bluegrass or a fescue type seed, is not the best thing to be doing. I know you're doing it because of, you know, the aesthetic value, but you're just going to be struggling and struggling and struggling. There's no getting around it. So, you know, what's going on in this particular location? Is it along of, you know, the sidewalk? Is it along a driveway? Is it close, you know, let's say within 20 or 25 feet of a larger mature shade tree circumstance? Is there, you know, there's all kinds of factors that can influence, you know, the ability of the grass seed to not only just germinate, but it could germinate and just, you know, sort of like, you know, collapse due to exhaustion because it's not the ideal time to be doing it.
So you're saying I'd be best just to wait until September to...
Right.
To, okay. All right. Good enough. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, and if you've got these patches that that has been, you know, let's say problematic from an aesthetic standpoint, browning and everything else for a long period of time, maybe consider getting a couple pieces of sod versus trying to do it with seed.
Yeah, okay. I might do that. All right, thank you.
Sure, good luck. And, I mean, lawns here is extremely difficult. There's no getting around it. So the zoysias look aesthetically in the wintertime, that tan color, you go, ooh. But, you know, that's just part of this, you know, the situation. And then the cool season, you know, lawns of bluegrasses and fescues, in the summertime, they don't turn brown like the zoysia does in the wintertime. But they don't like the heat of the summertime, and they don't perform well. And then in our situation, too, with fungus problems and all kinds of things like that, and there's all sorts of other things that can impact, you know, the production of the lawn. Even if you're not really, let's say, close to trees, the tree feeder roots go beyond the drip line of the tree, so the extension of the branches, and that has an impact on the ability of lawn to be successful. So our weather is bad. We're at that transition zone where north meets south, and it's a tough time. Some certain years is going to be better for one versus the other. And it's just a roll of a dice. Let's head over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. I have a lot of vinca ground cover that I've planted many, many years ago, and I'd like to transplant some of it. Is it better to do that, towards the end of the year, like when it's a little cooler, or would it be better to wait until the spring?
No, probably better to do it in, let's say, September, October, that time frame, because it will help the root system get established. Now, are you wanting to do this because you have an abundance of it, or you just don't want to buy, let's say, a couple flats, you know, at a nursery? And I'm not just saying that to produce or promote, let's say, nurseries and things like that, but that might be a little bit easier to use something that you've, you know, that have been, let's say, done by professional growers, as opposed to just digging up a clump and trying to move the clump and having good success with it.
I got you. Yeah, I have a large abundance of it, and I just thought, you know, it would be easy just to dig a big clump out and plant in a different spot.
But just, I mean, realize that that spot that you're digging this out of, it's going to take it quite a while before it's going to, you know, let's say infill, cover up, you know, with growth that's, you know, from the vinca, I'm assuming. Is this the variegated one or is this just a green-leafed one?
Just the green.
Okay, so with the blue flowers?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a great ground cover. There's no getting around it. I mean, the evergreen quality and everything else. So just realize that... it could take it a while to recover, and the spot that you dig it out, you're going to have to fill that in, and I'd probably do a compost topsoil blend to infill that hole where you've dug it, you know, dug it out, even if it's only an inch or two deep.
Okay, and you still think it would be okay, like in August, September, that it would root enough that it would do okay over the winter?
Yeah, that's because the ground is warm, and that's, I mean, that's the ideal thing to trigger, you know, root system growth. And then the plants, even though they're evergreen, they're still going to go to sleep for the winter time. That's why fall is by far the best time to do any kind of planting, transplanting, or anything else. Where spring, we're coming out of winter time. The ground is still, I mean, the ground is cold. The root system is not, the growth is not triggered. And then the worst probably season for a lot of plants is summertime. So it's going through all this transition, and then it faces our summer like what we're having right now.
Right. Okay, well, that's pretty much all I needed. I appreciate the info.
Sure, my pleasure. And folks, after break, we're going to have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Albert Pujols comes to bat. Cardinals slugger Albert Pujols talks with Tom Ackerman Mondays at 9:50.
He hits a fly ball left field, and it's gone!
Exclusively on the Voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
or 1-800-925-1120. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had several calls about people, you know, growing tomatoes and just being really dissatisfied with sort of the tomato production as far as actually getting real tomatoes out of it. Our tax dollars at work, the University of Missouri Extension Service, they put out an article on what's, you know, some of the things that impact tomatoes as far as all kinds of different things. It was like 9 or 10 different things, and I just, you know, picked the one with four, you know, poor fruits, you know, set. And, you know, one of the major factors is high temperatures, especially if it's a, you know, it hinders, you know, fruit set, and that is just, if temperatures during the day are above 90, which of course they are, and above 70 at night, that usually results in poor flowering and then a reduction of the flower fruit, you know, fruit set in the flowers. Extreme cases, none of the flowers will be pollinated, and so you just end up with, you get the cluster, it could, you know, the flowering could happen, but then nothing happens beyond the flowers. So research indicates that nighttime temperature is likely more critical than the daytime temperatures, which I didn't realize that that was a circumstance. The ideal temperature range for tomatoes as far as production and temperatures at night is 59 to 68 degrees. Another important factor beyond temperature, it can be blamed on poor fruit set, is just inadequate nutrients, you know, nutrition. So in other words, fertilizing your plants and keeping them moist is really important to, you know, keep them doing well. And especially if you've got a larger tomato, you're going to have a tomato plant. You could have fruit that has already been set and growing on the lower part of the plant, but you can't get anything to happen on the upper, you know, let's say middle to upper part of the tomato plant. And that's all related to, you know, nutrition and everything else. So there's several different things, you know, to be concerned with when it comes to tomatoes and the, you know, tomatoes being able to produce something that's going to be worthwhile. So let's head over to Joe's yard now. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I'm having a bit of a problem with my holly bushes. I've had
had them in the ground here for well over 20 years, and several of them are starting to dry up and look like they're dying. Obviously, there's still some green on there, but their telltale signs look like they're dying. Is it because of the heat or the possibly a disease?
Probably not a disease, I wouldn't think, because there's not going to be a disease that really impacts, let's say, the hollies that adversely. So I would think it's probably age in combination with the heat. That's, you know, certainly a factor. Now, where are they planted? Are they close to the foundation of the house?
They've been close to the foundation of the house, as I mentioned earlier, well over 20 years
right now.
And there's several of them. I've got about half a dozen of them out here along the border. And I had the lawn service not too long ago for weeds and what have you, and I was wondering if possibly they may have picked up on some of the overspray.
Ooh, hopefully that's not the case. But, you know, generally, you know, contractors should be very careful about a situation like that. But have you regularly fertilized them and that type thing and make sure that the soil pH is correct? So you've done everything right. So to me, it's just a factor of age plus our weather circumstance. And even if you have an irrigation system, it's sometimes just doesn't make that much difference.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to get some replacements at some local nursery, but I'm wondering now whether to plant in the same location or not.
I would say that it probably, if you had 20 years of success in that location, and it sounds like you're taking care of them properly and everything else, I wouldn't be overly concerned with putting them in the same location. You don't have to, but it doesn't sound like you know that particular spot is a bad news circumstance for the holly.
I got it. Well, okay, Mike, I appreciate your service. Thank you. Have a good one.
Sure, that's my pleasure. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff and broadleaf evergreens, I mean, it's a tough world out there for them, meaning here in this region. So whether it's azaleas, rhododendrons, holly, or whatever else, they just, it's a struggle. Even though you've had 20 years of success, there are still times when it goes, oh. But anyway, good luck with that and go to your favorite garden center and make sure that I don't want to say anything against certain places that sell plant material, but certain places are much better than others because they take care of the plants on a constant basis. So anyway, good luck with that. And Joe, and let's see, one second, we'll find out who's calling. Is it Jason?
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
And let's head over to Jason's yard. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I have got an animal of some sort. I don't know. It leaves a hole about the size of a golf ball, like a smooth hole, and maybe some hamster-type trails around my lawn that I can see. So any guesses what that, you know, vole, field mice, and how do I get rid of them?
Basically, it sounds like a vole, and consequently, you're just going to have to get a trap and go to your favorite garden center and just get, what they'll have is kind of a big rat trap. And then you're going to put something there to entice the vole to the rat trap, and then, you know, then the rat trap will catch it that way. But what you need to do is just, you know, hopefully you can set them, you know, out where you don't have pets or children or anything else that might trigger it. But consequently, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Okay, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. So if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As we, the gentleman was earlier on talking about the Japanese beetles. Just be careful. We always thought the Japanese beetles were only going to do damage to certain plant material. And if you remember last week, I said I saw a Japanese beetle eating my canna, which is a summertime, you know, tropical type bulb tuber, and eating the foliage. It was just like, what? What are you doing here? I guess because there's no roses in our neighborhood, they feel like we're obligated to eat something because we'll die if we don't. So they're eating really kind of strange things. And you can, you know, let's say you kind of got a little bit exhausted and you want to plant some new things like zinnias, cosmos, alyssum, pansies, marigolds, cleomies. You can get the seeds in the ground and just take care of them, and then you're going to have a nice fall bloom circumstance with them. Now let's head over to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The Extension Service information about the tomato plants was really interesting, and I'm wondering if the same principles apply to annual flowers. It has been brutal this year with our annual flowers.
Not necessarily, because we're talking about annual flowers are really just producing flowers. And the tomatoes can produce flowers, but as far as getting those flowers to be pollinated, that's a different thing to produce tomatoes. So that's basically the difference. And I don't know what kind of annuals you're growing, but it's been a little bit of a rough year as far as, you know, really constantly needing, you know, I don't want to say constant care, but I mean, just to sort of miss a couple cycles of watering or fertilizing or things like that can send them downhill when we've got this type of heat circumstance. I mean,
yeah, we've got a lot of annuals in pots all over our yard, and the front of our house faces west, and we have a big pot on the front porch, and the flowers in that pot look like somebody took a blowtorch to parts of them. and I water pretty consistently and use Miracle-Gro. It's just, this has just been a brutal year.
Right.
So I find with gardening in general, watering is the most important and the most difficult part of being successful. Do you have any tips on watering?
Basically, you just want to make sure, especially if you're growing things in containers, you don't necessarily have to water routinely, because sometimes overwatering can be adverse to the plant material. But I've found, first of all, I grow a lot of things in pots. I put saucers underneath all my, you know, pretty much all my pots. And I keep, you know, some moisture, some water in those saucers just from a humidity factor. But also I watch the inside of the pots. And then if I start to see the potting mix shrink away from the inside of the pot, then I make sure that I really water thoroughly. I've even noticed that along the, you know, I live in the city, so along the section of plantable area between the sidewalk and street, that the soil is actually shrinking away during this heat circumstance away from the curb. And so that's a real good indicator that, you know, you should really water thoroughly.
Great. Thanks for your help, Mike. I appreciate it.
Sure. And it sounds like, you know, with fertilizing and everything else, you're doing that exactly as you should. So Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Definitely sounds like Mike Miller Garden Hotline music. Guess what, folks? If you are growing a lawn and you're mowing it, and guess what? If the clippings are too long, when you look back as you just pass over an area, that could be causing problems. So what I did is this past week, I cut my grass. I had to miss, you know, I usually cut about every 7 to 10 days, depending upon weather and all this other stuff. But Tracy and I were doing some other stuff, so I skipped or missed a day. So when I did cut the grass, I looked back, and the clippings, I have a mulching mower, and the clippings were probably 1 inch to 2 inches long. So that was too long. So what I did is, rather than going back with a bag and, you know, bagging them up as I go along, I just double mowed, and that chopped them up and, you know, made it so they weren't as, you know, as long as they are. But if the clippings get too long, what that can do is create, you know, let's say a layer or a barrier, and that could create a humidity problem. And then even for, let's say, I have zoysia grass, so even humidity with the zoysia can be trouble from the standpoint you could start some fungus situations. So, and the areas that I have killed off broadleaf weeds in my lawn are finally starting to fill in. It's really taken a little bit longer than what I thought, but battling weeds is just, there's no getting around it. Whether you're using a broadleaf weed killer or whether you're hand digging or anything else, it's just lots of work. That's pretty much it. If you are happen to be growing any kind of rhubarb or asparagus, make sure that you keep up with the weed circumstance, but also fertilize established plant material. That's really very, very important. And with your cool season lawns, just don't do any kind of, you know, let's say fertilizing when it's this hot. You're just going to cause some real problems. But what you want to do is water infrequently, and you want to make sure, and I was talking to one of my neighbors, Tom, who's a fireman with the St. Louis Fire Department. He said a week or so ago, he said, well, it really rained, so there should have been a lot of moisture into the ground. I said, right after it rains, I go out with either a weeding tool or a spade or something like that, and I just push it into the ground, and I see how far down the moisture from a rain or from when I watered went down into the soil. And some of these rains, it looks like, wow, it's really raining hard. Yes, but especially if you haven't watered your lawn or your garden or anything like that, and then it rains, let's say, quickly for a short period of time or for however long, a lot of times the water doesn't soak into the ground. It kind of just runs off. So just realize that just because it is raining doesn't necessarily mean that it's really going to be to the advantage of the root system and the plant material, regardless of what you're growing, whether it's annuals, whether it's perennials, whether it's trees, shrubs, lawns, or anything else. So always keep that in mind. And with your zoysias, this is a time of year you should be fertilizing your zoysia. And I do mine. I use a Scott's liquid feed, and that way I can just hook it up to the hose and just, you know, I do every month. I do June, July, and August, so 3 times a year. And when I do mow, I set my mower at about, I think it's like 3.5 inches. So that's what I, you know, one of the things that I really want to do is, you know, keep it from, you know, having a double mow, let's put it that way. And if you do have annual flowers, like the gentleman who called earlier, fertilizing every 2 weeks, that's going to be the best for your plant material. And that's really kind of important. And if you've had anything recently planted within the last, let's say, 2 years, just make sure that you go out there and watch as far as any kind of wilting or any kind of drought stress related to this heat. And especially if it's today, it doesn't look like there's much wind. But some of these days when it's been hot, it's been windy as well. And that really dries out the soil and dries out the, you know, the plant material too. So those are the kind of things to think about. If you do have iris, I keep talking about waiting for, you know, to do divisions or to do whatever it happens to be. With the iris this time of year, you can divide them after they finish blooming. So with the tubers, the classic iris, the flags, they're okay to do this time of year. And you can actually dig up the root system, the tuber, and you don't have to plant it in the ground immediately. You can just kind of store it until you decide where you want to move it to. So that's one of the other things that you need to be, you know, thinking about if you do have some iris. The weeds has just been, they're exhausting. And the warm season weeds, I'll tell you, the spurge is just, it's just going nuts. You know, cracks in between the sidewalk and everything else in the lawns. And how the, you know, how the stuff is being spread around. I keep thinking, well, every year at the end of the year, I've gotten rid of most of the weeds, but I don't use too much herbicide. I do use a little bit, like I said, the brown spots with the broadleaf weeds. But generally, I try to keep it up with just, you know, doing the hand weeding. And this, when the warm season, basically weeds, the annual weeds, there's plenty of weeds, obviously, for sure. But the violets, the goosegrass, the barnyard grass, the crabgrass, carpet weed, there's lamb's quarters, there's purslane, there's just, I mean, the amount of weeds is just unbelievable. And I keep saying this, and you probably say, you don't need to say it again, but my father's philosophy growing up, you know, with out in Ellisville, it was just like, if it's green, it's good. And that's, you know, it was just too much work. And he wasn't really into the, you know, the world of plants. So that's kind of what he was all about. And that's fine. Make sure that your the plant materials, if you're, let's say, deciding you want to plant some new plant materials in with your existing plants, that they need the same soil pH. You know, an alkaline soil versus an acidic soil can make a really, you know, tough plant circumstance. Let's say you put azaleas close to clematis. Clematis like an alkaline soil, azaleas like an acidic soil, and in close proximity, that's a tough one to make happen. So if you do have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Stuart. And guess what, folks? This is the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. Oh, and by the way, thanks for having me on your show. Remember, if you weren't there, I would not be here. And we can discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs for all plant material, basically. So, in other words, I am full of it when it comes to plant material. Whether it's annuals, whether it's bulbs, whether it's edibles, whether it's ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I've been playing in the world of plants since, I finished school in California and came back and worked at the Botanical Garden in the late 70s and still playing around in the world of plants. But please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take towards success, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board, there's James. He's producing. So if you do call in, he just needs your name, not why you're calling or anything else related to questions or that type thing. And I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you want to go have me come to your home and do a walk and talk, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And that's where my phone number and email address, probably email is a little bit easier than phone number. That phone number tag back and forth and back and forth sometimes is like, but anyway, enough of that stuff. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I know it's really extremely difficult. But I certainly, I don't have dogs right now. I've had dogs historically in the past. But all the people that are out there routinely walking their dogs and taking care of their dogs, a tip of the trowel goes out to them because I always find it. It's just really entertaining to look at people, to look at the dog they chose and see, oh, yeah, it looks like this dog is perfect for you. And so all the dog walkers that are very conscientious. And because the pavement can be really hot, and you could just imagine, even if you got paws that are, in theory, acclimated towards warm pavement, you know, sidewalks or roads or whatever it happens to be, just, be conscious that maybe sometimes it might be a little bit too hot to take your dog out, at least during the day. But even if you go out later at night after the sun's gone down, the pavement's still kind of warm. So But I greatly appreciate everybody that does walk their dogs. I find the dogs are always really entertaining and a lot of fun. So that is the tip of the trowel to all the dog owners that walk their dogs through our neighborhood. It's just we have a great variety of dogs. And some of them are just totally crazy nuts, and some of them are really mellow, and some of them are just, and it all depends upon age, type, and, you know, how they're being raised and everything else. So tip of the trowel goes out to all the dog walkers in South City, so I greatly appreciate that. Let's go and try to get a couple calls in, and let's go to Sherry's yard. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Mike. I've really enjoyed the show, first and foremost. I've learned a lot from you, but here's my dilemma. I have a lot of dry fertilizer. What am I supposed to be doing with that, or can I use it in this heat?
What type of fertilizer?
It's in a green container. I can't remember what. It's dry, the sprinkle kind, the shakes.
So, what are you planning on using it on? Are you using it on your lawn? Are you using it in your perennials?
I wanted to use it on my vegetable beds. You know, like I have eggplants and okra and tomato plants out here growing.
Yeah.
And so can I still use it in this heat?
Yes, you can, but just make sure you water it in, because if you don't water it in, it's not going to hurt the plants if they're healthy anyway. It's just that it won't dissolve as fast. So just, you know, you sprinkle it in according to the rate that's on the label of the fertilizer, and then water it in right immediately after you put it down, and that dissolves it, and that makes it available for the root, for the feeder roots of the plants to absorb the nutrients.
Awesome. And then I also have kale and collard greens that have not grown in. They're at a standstill, and they've been like this for months. Should I just pull them out?
Yeah.
I guess it was bud seeds.
Yeah, so it's just you could go ahead and wait for another couple weeks and then, you know, plant another set of seeds, or get some plants and install those and see if they're going to be better producers, you know, as the weather starts cooling down in the fall.
Yeah, because the okra is doing fine, and my eggplants are doing fine.
Right.
My tomatoes, I heard what you said about tomatoes.
Right.
So, yeah, I understand that. That's why I only have half the amount that I normally would have. So, yeah, little by little. Oh, wait, let me ask you. I'm doing strawberries, too, where I'm working the vine to try to create more strawberry plants. Is there anything else I should be doing? Because the mother plants seem like they're dying off, whereas the reproductions, they're doing okay, but the mother plants seem like they're dying off from doing it. Is it normal?
Generally not. I mean, the mother plants should stay, you know, stay functional and growing and everything else. And then the side shoots that you're, you know, helping root, that should add to the colony. But I don't know why the mother plants are dying off.
Yeah, because they're turning brown and they're just, you know, looking really bad.
Ooh, that's not so good, but... just kind of keep going, you know, the way you're doing. There's not too much you can do. If you're watering them and taking care of the strawberries just in general, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, they're producing little tiny, tiny strawberries now, the mother plants are.
And
Do
you have, what type of strawberries do you have? Do you have ever-bearing, or do you have ones that just produce all at once?
And then,
okay, so ever-bearing type. So it sounds like you're doing.
This is the third year, though, too.
Right.
This is the third year having them. And so what I've been doing is each year trying to just reap the benefits of those shoots.
Right.
And grow new plants off of them. So maybe they're a done deal.
Maybe stop doing that a little bit and see if, for one or two seasons and see what happens. Because you shouldn't really be getting too much production. If they've only been in the ground for 3 years, you know, it's about a five-year time.
No, they're in a pot.
Oh, they're in a pot.
Yeah.
Oh, like a strawberry jar or a pot or whatever. So.
Yeah, you know, those hanging pots that they usually sell at Home Depot and Lowe's.
Right.
That's what, I got them 3 years ago.
Okay, so now that makes it a little bit more understandable that the mother one is kind of exhausted and just collapsing.
So should I put it in the ground then this fall?
Yeah, and I mean, you want to improve the soil and everything else before you plant them, and maybe add some compost topsoil mixture, and that would elevate the bed space of where they're going to grow an inch or so above the surrounding ground. That would be to their advantage.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful day.
You do the very same thing. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Trusted information, live and local. From the award-winning KMOX Newsroom.
Just remember, if you've got annuals that you've been disappointed with, whether they're growing in the pots or in the ground, you can still head out to the garden centers because they have quite a large variety of annuals. And if you do get some new annuals, basically the second week or so after you do the planting, you can go ahead and do the first fertilizing. So that's, you know, very important to keep them fertilized. Then routinely, every 2 to 3 weeks, to keep them robust, to keep them growing and everything else. So, but sometimes things kind of like, oh, they don't look as good as what I thought they should. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, let's say tossing them rather than trying to grow them to look better. Let's head over to Roxanne's yard. Hi, Roxanne. Hello?
Hi, sorry. I have a question. Thanks for the show, by the way. We really enjoy it. We listen to it every week. But we have a cherry tree in our yard, and this year, it's kind of late calling you, but this year it started, the fruit came out, it was, you know, green, but before it turned red, it almost went straight to rot. Do you know what could have caused that?
Probably weather related more so than anything else. If you've had success with them and for historically, then it's got to be, you know, because we did have a huge amount of, you know, rainfall early. We keep forgetting, because it's been so hot and dry lately, that how much water that we got earlier in the year. And so just that, not only just from the fact that, it, you know, moisture, but also when it is, you know, it's raining, that means cloud cover. So that could, you know, have impacted on your cherries.
Okay. Yeah, we've made cherry jam and pies and everything. It's been a great tree. It took about 5 or 6 years to actually bear fruit, but now it's great. But this year it just went from, oh, let's go out, it's probably time to pick the cherries, and it was all rotten already.
Wow, that's too bad. Because if you've got a standard size tree, then it's going to be, you know, 5 to 7 years before you're going to get, you know, good fruit production. If you get a semi dwarf, it's going to be 3 to 4 years, let's say 4 years or so, and then a dwarf is going to be a little bit less than that. So.
Yeah, I think we had a semi-dwarf.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah, well, thank you. So can't do anything about that. It's not like end rot on tomatoes. It's not something you have to treat. It's just
no, it's not something to add to the soil or anything. It's my guess, again, is just it's our nutty weather.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
It's nice to know that there isn't something that we could have done about it.
As long as the foliage looks healthy and everything on the tree looks good, then you should be okay.
No, it looks great. So, okay. And the tree's beautiful. It just didn't bear any fruit that we could actually eat. So, all right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
We appreciate your show.
Thanks for having me on your show. Let's head over to Cleo's yard. Hi, Cleo.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I planted an elephant ear bulb probably April, May, and it hasn't sprouted yet. I was wondering, is there a foolproof way of knowing how to, which way is up or which way is down when you plant them in a container?
No, it really doesn't matter all that much. If you're worried about up and down and all around, well, you can kind of figure, if you look at the elephant ear, but you can plant them horizontal, and that way it doesn't make any difference. But if it hasn't, you know, started to grow any kind of growth at all, then it's not going to do well. I'm not saying it's rotted, but something's, you know, dysfunctional with it, because I put mine in a while ago, and I mean, some of my elephant ears right now are, let's say, almost 2 feet long and about 15 inches wide.
Wow. I usually, you know, just dig them up and replant them, but I bought some new ones.
Oh.
And it didn't do good at all.
Wow. Yeah, if it's not showing any kind of growth by now, it's probably not going to.
So just pitch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, pull
Thank
it out
you.
And you can look at it and, you know, uh-huh. see what you think, because I've gotten so many elephant ears, I'm starting to just stick them in the sort of the strip between the sidewalk and street and stuff. Now, they were smaller, and, you know, they were a little bit, you know, let's say slow as far as emerging, but now they have probably 4 to 6 inch size leaves, and so they're really starting to take off.
I don't have a twig. Okay, then. Thanks a lot. Sure. I appreciate it.
Yep. Good luck in the future, Cleo. And now let's head over to Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Mike. Yes, I have cone flowers and my orange ones, I guess you could call them. They're really faded. Well, it looks like they're getting ready to go to seed, but they're really faded. Now, can I prune or deadhead them, and will they reflower, or they just flower once a year?
Pretty much just once a year. I mean, some of the varieties have an extended bloom period. Some of them are going to be a little bit shorter, but I'll tell you, I have the purple cone flowers, and the gold finches love those things because this is the end, like what you're talking about, the sort of the end of the flowering season, and they're starting to form seeds, and that's one of the favorite seeds of the finches. And, I mean, I can't believe sometimes I go around to the side of the garage where they're planted, and it's like, whoa, there's, you know, I'm not saying it's a flock of goldfinches, but 3 or 4 goldfinches there all at once, and that's, you know, good fun to see.
Yeah, that I do have some goldfinches, and I notice they're around. I don't have no bird feed out, but I guess that's where the goldfinches are going to then.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So, I mean, so it sounds like what you're experiencing and what the goldfinches are experiencing is exactly what should be happening.
Okay, so there's no, I just leave them like that.
Right.
No sense of trimming them off. Yeah,
you can. I mean, you can prune them if you want to, but a lot of times the seeds, if the, let's say the birds don't eat them, if the seeds drop, then you're gonna, you know, some of the seeds could germinate next year, and you could get more plants as a result of that.
I think that's the reason why it keeps getting bigger all the time.
Exactly, you're right. Thanks,
okay,
Gary.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go over to Don's yard. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I have a serious problem, and I do have two questions. My first problem is I have awful lots of bagworms. Look like they come every year on my arborvitae trees. I have about 10 on the side of the house, and I'm picking, look like every other day to try to get them off, you know, picking them off, you
right.
know. But they look like they come and go. And I like to know, is there some type of treatment that I could put on them now or something to alleviate this so I wouldn't have to take this time to do it every year, you know what I'm saying? Because some of them, one or two of them is just about gone. I'm thinking about just jerking the ones out that look like they gone, you know,
right.
starting from the bottom up.
Yeah, you really got it. I mean, the bagworms are really a vicious situation because once the bagworm is, let's say, has come out and attached itself to a location, that's the female. The male is like a flighted moth or butterfly or whatever you want to call it. It's a moth. But that bag that hangs there, for the following year, that's filled with eggs. So that's why if you just miss a few, you could end up with, you know, a whole lot of bagworms again year after year after year. So that's what you're experiencing.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And so there's really nothing that can penetrate that bag to kill those eggs. What you'd have to do is just watch in the early spring when the eggs are hatching, they're going to crawl out from the bag that they were in and start forming their own bag before they attach themselves. And when they're in that crawling stage, that's when you have to spray them with an insecticide.
I see. And will that stop them from eating the evergreen, you know, arborvitae trees so bad?
Yeah, it will, but you got to get them at that crawling stage. Once they're attached, there's nothing you can do. Nothing will penetrate that bag and kill the eggs off that are in there.
And when is the best time of year to do that?
Well, you've got to watch in the early spring. So it's hard to say what month or, you know, particularly you just when the weather starts warming up, just you go out there and just start watching for them. They're going to be about a, let's say, a quarter inch or so, and they're going to be crawling along the branches.
I see. Okay. Oh. Let's see. Now, if I take them out, could I? Is it? I like to replace them maybe with a shrub called yews that don't have no type of disease or
right.
something that don't require too much maintenance. Is that a good shrub to put in the place of it?
Yeah, the shrubs are, I mean, yews are very tough. Just realize that there's about three or four different varieties. Some are more narrow and some are wider and some are going to be taller. And so just decide which, you know, which particular variety you want to use. But yeah, they're generally not as, let's say, prone to any kind of insect problems or disease problems as some of the arborvitae have shown to be.
All right. Okay. Now, when the best time to is it too late to plant elephant ears? I got a customer need wanted to put some elephant ears in tomorrow.
No, you can get them in the ground. I mean, or in pots and potting mix. And there's, I mean, it's going to take them a little while, but the soil's going to be really warm, so that should trigger some growth. So, no, there's nothing wrong with planting them right now.
And do they require a lot of water?
No,
and
not necessarily.
And do they require a lot of sun?
No, they can grow in the shade. They can grow, if it's too wet, it's going to rot the bulb. But for the most part, no, they're pretty low care, let's put it that way.
All right, then.
All right.
Okay, then. Well, my only problem is that is the arborvitae's cost.
Right.
Look like I'm going to lose them in due time as right. time go by. I'm going to try to spray this quite a bit this coming next spring.
Right, but it's got to be, you got to hit those, you know, the crawling stage with your insecticide, so you can't just go out there and routinely spray it if, you know, if they're not crawling. So thanks, Dawn. Greatly appreciated. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Tonight, it's the Cards and Reds. Amron Pregame Show, 4:45. First pitch, 5:40. Hear the game here on KMOX and streaming on KMOX.com.
Back to the phones we go, and let's head over to George's yard. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I got a 6-foot evergreen. And there's a lot of new growth on it, but I got a section about 8 inches by 8 inches that's dead. Is there any way for that to come back, or is there any way I can spray to make sure it doesn't expand?
Probably it's not going to come back, no. With evergreens, whether it's a conifer or whether it's a broadleaf evergreen or anything at all, and pretty much anything deciduous, if a section is turned, you know, totally brown, then it's a goner, so just go ahead and prune it out. But as far as what actually caused it, who knows? I mean, it could have been something that broke the branch, that is brown. It could have been, who knows? It's difficult to guess what caused it. But if the overall shrub looks good, then you're fine.
Okay. Thank you. How much does it cost to do a walk and talk?
Just you can go to my website and it'll say, you know, it depends upon where you live and, I build in the cost factor as far as transfer, you know, getting to your home and everything else. So just go to my website and it'll tell you how much they are there.
Perfect. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Mike. I have some bushes, azaleas, American hollies, and a third kind I don't know. I trimmed them, and my question is this. Because summer is half over, are these bushes more or less done growing for the year?
Oh, yes. You shouldn't have any kind of growth as a result of that. What they should be doing now is basically forming flower buds for next year. So
yeah.
That's, you know, it's the whole process may be not visual, but that's, you know, what should be happening.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Sure. And remember to, you know, don't necessarily with those type of plants, fertilize them in the heat of the summertime. But as we come out of summer, early in the fall, you can fertilize them. But watch out about fertilizing any kind of broadleaf evergreen as we go into wintertime, because it could cause the, let's say, the process of keep going, even though you're not seeing any kind of visual growth, then you could have some winter kills as a result of that. So just be real careful.
Another question. You said now that they're not going to grow anymore this year. Approximately when do they stop growing in the year?
Basically what happens is, depending upon what variety it is, let's say they're going to flower, and then when we get into, you know, probably June, any kind of new growth should have, you know, should happen before that.
I see. Okay, well, good. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Gloria's yard. Hi, Gloria.
How you doing? Good morning.
Hi.
I'm going to ask you about these knockout roses. I've been fertilizing them with Miracle-Gro, and they just ain't blooming this year. I don't know if it's because so hot or what it is.
If the foliage and everything looks healthy, why they're not blooming, I'm not sure. If you're fertilizing them, I mean, you're doing everything you should. So that's about all you can do.
Yeah, I cut the old. I always cut the old off so it can look better, you know. But
right.
Usually they come right back on the second time. And the ones I got on the front, they don't come back. But the heat is this hot heat can mess up a lot of my plants, because it's too hot. I water them and don't want to do no good. And then when the rain messes your flowers all up. And another question I want to ask you, I got some cameras. And the heat, where I had them, the heat burned all the leaves and stuff up. Can I cut those down and they'll come back next year?
It depends. You know, generally the cannas are considered hardy, you know, if they're close to a house or, you know, they're protected. You know, but it just depends upon how severe the winter is going to be, how deep the ground freezes and how deep they're planted. But yeah, you could go ahead and so they haven't put out any new growth or any growth at all.
All the leaves is burned up from the heat.
Oh, so
where I had them, I should have took them when the heat came. It's 100 and where the shade is where my house is.
Right,
and they not the big. I got some big ones that I planted last year in my basement. They doing real good.
Okay.
But I bought two little mini ones from Home Depot, and they not doing nothing.
Okay.
I mean, they did when I bought them, but, the heat. And I watered myself twice a day with this 100 degrees.
Right. So it probably just they didn't have enough root system to absorb moisture to prevent them from turning brown. So, Gloria, just good luck with that. And sounds like you're having success with many things. So.
Okay, let me ask you one more thing. My cannas that I got that I did in the basement when I bought the bulbs, I'm trying to see, do I have to put those in the ground? They in pots now.
No, you can. I grow mine in pots.
So I can keep them all year, just put them somewhere else.
Yeah, basically what I do is you can just cut them off and bring them inside and just don't water them during the wintertime. And what I do is I pull them out of the pots, I shake all the potting mix off, and I just put them in paper bags for the winter, but that's just my own system.
Oh, okay. And I'll do that then, because I want to keep those.
Right.
They like 3 feet tall. I was going to put them in the ground, but can you put them in the ground?
Yeah.
And they'll come back. Do I need to cut them all the way down?
Either that or they'll just, get frozen and they'll freeze all the way to, to the top of the surface.
So just cut them to where the pot is.
Right.
But if I bring them in and put them in the basement, I don't have to cut them.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Sure. Yeah, you don't have to cut them, but they're not going to look good inside unless you have grow lights. But let's see. Let's get another call in. Let's go to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Mike. I'm having a little trouble with my impatiens starting them from seed. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I've tried different seed medias, and I've put them in light. I've put them out of light. I keep them moist. I put them on a heat pad. I take them off a heat pad. I've tried them a variety of ways, and I'm not doing any good, so I need your help.
Basically, I would say give up. Impatiens are not certain things are not easy to grow from seed, and impatiens is one of those particular plants.
Is it?
Yeah. So even though you got, sounds like you got everything exactly as you need, you got the potting mix for starting plant material, you're taking care of them, and it's just not, you know, give up.
All right. Well, thank you for your advice.
I mean, I don't want to be cruel or mean or anything, but certain things are just, like I said, just really tough to grow from seed. So, and impatience.
How do they grow them then commercially? How do they have so much success with them?
Well, I mean, they've got a different type of environment. They've got, with the lighting, and even though you're got the bottom heat, you got the light and everything else, it's just sort of a different, let's say, a different circumstance. And you can't, it's to, as a homeowner, to duplicate what a professional greenhouse is going to do is going to be very difficult.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'm not such a bad gardener after all.
No, you're not.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Let's head over to Marcia's yard. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm not sure if I have a fungus problem in my yard or in my flower bed. My purple coneflowers, the petals are all turning black, and I noticed my banana plants, a lot of the new shoots that are coming up, they're turning black. So have you ever seen petals on the purple coneflowers turn black?
Are they you're talking about the petals right at the ground level, so the clump?
No, well, there are some black on the leaves, but on the petals themselves.
Oh, on the petals of the flowers. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's just, you know, it could be a little bit of a fungus problem, but I wouldn't be overly concerned with either one of those. So when you're watering, are you watering above, you know, let's say, what time of day are you watering when you do water?
In the morning, and I have, like, soaker hoses.
Okay, well, that's the best thing to do. So you're not getting a lot of moisture on, you know, let's say the petals of the flowers or on the foliage or anything else. So you're doing everything, you know, that you could. So why you're having this circumstance is a little bit difficult to understand.
Is there something I can put in the dirt come spring for fungus?
No, not really. I mean, not from what, you know, not from the plants. Do you dig up your bananas and take them inside?
No, I cover them with insulation and I cut them down and then wrap them with insulation and then put chicken wire around them and fill it with leaves.
Okay. So, I mean, you're doing everything and you've had success with it. So it's just this particular year is, you know, causing the problems.
Yep. So I didn't know if there was something to put in the dirt. I was reading up on things, you know, and like you got to catch it with a spray early. Before, you know, the problem starts.
Right. And usually, the petals on the flowers, that's, you know, that's something that usually doesn't happen. So, again, it's just, and you're not overhead watering or anything like that, or you're not watering at the wrong time of day. And so why this is happening is just who knows.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Let's head over to Diana's yard. Hi, Diana.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Two things. When is the best time to buy and plant a crepe myrtle?
Spring is probably going to be the better time because that's when they're going to be most available at the garden centers, not because it's a better time to do it. And dividing it, I would say you're taking a big chance to do any kind of division on any kind of woody plant material. You know, crepe myrtle, that's exactly what it is. It's a shrub. So to split it apart, you're opening up wounds that may take a while to heal, and you could get some rot inside that. So I would consider not doing that and just getting another one as opposed to, you know, trying to move, try to split one and transplant part of it away from the original area.
Okay, and what about elephant ears? Do I need to bring those in the fall?
They're not truly hardy. You know, some with the cannas and some of the elephant ears, I'm actually going to try to grow some elephant ears along between my house and Pam's house, who's my neighbor, and see what happens, because I've never really grown them and left them out over the wintertime because I want to see what happens. But there's a lot of houses in my neighborhood who have left cannas out for several years, and they've come back, you know, nicely. So it would just be a roll of the dice to see if they're going to come back for you.
And do I wait till there's a frost to dig them up, or?
No, you don't have to wait that long. I don't like to do that because once they get the frost on it, they get it, you know, the foliage gets kind of mushy. So when it starts, the days start getting shorter and shorter, then I just, you know, kind of routinely go out and, you know, I've got some in pots, some in the ground, and some in different places, and I just start digging them up. I don't have to wait till, let's say, the frost kills the foliage before I do that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Michael's yard. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. I have an area about 15 feet by 15 feet that was dug up by a utility company, and it's a mess. They brought up a lot of rock and a lot of clay, and what I'd like to do is prepare the soil properly and go down to a proper depth and then sod it. Two questions. What should I do to prepare it? And secondly, since it's so hot, I would certainly think that I'm not supposed to put sod down now, but can you put sod down in the fall?
Fall is ideal time to put sod down. So, yes, definitely you could do it then. As far as soil's preparation goes, I'd get rid of a bunch of the junk as much as you possibly can to a depth of about, let's say, 6 to 8 inches, and then get some topsoil compost mix or just some good quality topsoil and mix that in and make sure you blend it in with the existing soil that's going to be still left, you know, after you go down, you know, 6 or 8 inches.
All right. Okay. And the fall, early fall, put it in and keep it watered, I guess?
Yeah, keep it watered. And you're talking about sod like bluegrass or fescue. You're not talking zoysia, right?
No zoysia.
Okay. So, yeah, fall is, you know, a really good time to do it and get the, you know, as soon as it kind of cools down a little bit, when you can get out there and get the soil prepared, that way, you know, get it done ahead of time. And that way, if there's any sinking or anything, you can compensate for that and then just put, you know, and then put the sod on top of it.
All right. That's what I'm going to do. Thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Art's yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Mike, with your experience and any success, a 2-in-1, you dig one hole and you put different bulbs at different depths and then have one succeed the other with respect to the passage of time.
You're asking me, like, well, I do that a lot. I plant tulips, let's say, and crocus in the same hole. So the
at different depths.
Yes, the tulips go down about 4 to 6 inches. The crocus go down about 2 inches.
What about fall blooming crocuses?
As far as growing them?
As far as planting and observing the propagation of the leaves.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the blooms on the fall crocuses before you get the leaves.
Well, I mean, that's kind of happens in the springtime, too. The crocus flowers could come up, and then the foliage could start emerging after that.
You know, I hear you talk bulbs and tubers, but never tell people about the corms.
Well, that's true. It's just corms is something that sounds a little bit abstract, but yeah, that's just a different type of bulb as opposed to a tuber or a regular bulb.
Well, let me tell you, 10% of organic matter in your lawn will help your doggone soil moisture to be passed on down to the microbes.
You're absolutely right.
So you're missing out. You got to have more compost.
Well, that's why I say after you core aerate, then you put compost down.
Right. You got to have that microbe plant food there. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Art. And now let's head over to Jones. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I live in Glendale, and we have a terrible situation. Our 50 to 150-year-old oak trees have what one tree guy said was a virus and an arborist said it was a fungus. They've been losing clumps of leaves. They die off in the tree, and then the clump falls down to the ground.
Right.
And they're saying that there's nothing that we can do about losing these tens of trees that are in really prominent part of our landscape and shade.
They're exactly right. And, you know, to be honest with you, an age factor is, you know, there. We don't, you're not going to see too many trees that are, you know, older than that. It's just that they basically, they're having these problems just because they're not healthy and vigorous. And this is, there's nothing you can do with the older trees.
Okay. How long will it last? How long will the trees last?
It's just a roll.
Is it like one season or?
No. It's going to take a while. They're not going to die just all at once. So it's going to be a slow process. So thanks, Joan. Thanks to everybody for calling in. Greatly appreciated. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
If they're not crawling. So thanks, Dawn. Greatly appreciated. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Tonight, it's the Cards and Reds. Amron pregame show 4:45. First pitch 5:40. Hear the game here on KMOX and streaming on KMOX.com.
Back to the phones we go, and let's head over to George's yard. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I got a 6-foot evergreen, and there's a lot of new growth on it, but I got a section about 8 inches by 8 inches that's dead. Is there any way for that to come back, or is there any way I can spray to make sure it doesn't expand?
Probably, it's not going to come back, no. With evergreens, whether it's a conifer or whether it's a broadleaf evergreen or anything at all, and pretty much anything deciduous, if a section is turned, you know, totally brown, then it's a goner. So just go ahead and prune it out. But as far as what actually caused it, who knows? I mean, it could have been something that broke the branch, that is brown. It could have been, who knows? It's difficult to guess what caused it. But if the overall shrub looks good, then that you're fine.
Okay. Thank you. How much does it cost to do a walk and talk?
You can go to my website and it'll say, it depends upon where you live and, I build in the cost factor as far as transport, getting to your home and everything else. So just go to my website and it'll tell you how much they are there.
Perfect. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Mike. I have some bushes, azaleas, American hollies, and a third kind I don't know. I trimmed them. And my question is this, because summer is half over, are these bushes more or less done growing for the year?
Oh, yes. You shouldn't have any kind of growth as a result of that. What they should be doing now is basically forming flower buds for next year. So
yeah,
that's, you know, it's the whole process may be not visual, but that's, you know, what should be happening.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Sure. And remember to, you know, don't necessarily with those type of plants, fertilize them in the heat of the summertime. But as we come out of summer, early in the fall, you can fertilize them. But watch out about fertilizing any kind of broadleaf evergreen as we go into wintertime, because it could cause the, let's say, the process of keep going, even though you're not seeing any kind of visual growth. Then you could have some winter kills as a result of that. So just be real careful.
Another question. You said now that they're not going to grow anymore this year. Approximately when do they stop growing in the year?
Basically, basically what happens is, depending upon what variety it is, let's say they're going to flower, and then when we get into, you know, probably June, any kind of new growth should have, you know, should happen before that.
I see. Okay, well, good. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Gloria's yard. Hi, Gloria.
How you doing? Good morning.
Hi.
I'm going to ask you about these knockout roses. I've been fertilizing them with Miracle-Gro, and they just ain't blooming this year. I don't know if it's because so hot or what it is.
If the foliage and everything looks healthy, why they're not blooming, I'm not sure. If you're fertilizing them, I mean, you're doing everything you should. So that's about all you can do.
Yeah, I cut the old. I always cut the old off so it can look better, you know. But
right.
Usually they come right back on the second time. And the ones I got on the front, they don't come back. But the heat is, this hot heat can mess up a lot of my plants, you know, because it's too hot. I water them and don't want to do no good. And then when
right.
the rain mess your flowers all up. And another question I want to ask you, I got some cameras. And the heat, where I had them, the heat burned all the leaves and stuff up. Can I cut those down and they'll come back next year?
It depends. You know, generally the cannas are considered hardy, you know, if they're close to a house or, you know, they're protected. You know, but it just depends upon how severe the winter is going to be, how deep the ground freezes and how deep they're planted. But yeah, you could go ahead and so they haven't put out any new growth or any growth at all.
All the leaves is burned up from the heat.
Oh, so
where I had them, I should have put them, took them when the heat came. It's 100 and where the shade is, where my house is.
Right,
and they not the big. I got some big ones that I planted last year in my basement. Well, last year in my basement, they doing real good.
Okay.
But I bought two little mini ones from Home Depot, and they not doing nothing.
Okay.
I mean, well, they did when I bought them, but, you know, the heat. And I watered myself twice a day with this 100 degrees.
Right. So it probably just they didn't have enough root system to absorb moisture to prevent them from turning brown. So, yeah. So, Gloria, just good luck with that. And sounds like you're having success with many things. So.
Okay, let me ask you one more thing. My cannas that I got that I did in the basement when I bought the bulbs, I'm trying to see, do I have to put those in the ground? They in pots now.
No, you can. I grow mine in pots.
So I can keep them all year, just put them somewhere else.
Yeah, basically what I do is you can just cut them off and bring them inside and just don't water them during the wintertime. And what I do is I pull them out of the pots, I shake all the potting mix off, and I just put them in paper bags for the winter, but that's just my own system.
Oh, okay. I'll do that then, because I want to keep those.
Right.
They're like 3 feet tall. I was going to put them in the ground, but can you put them in the ground?
Yeah.
And they'll come back. Do I need to cut them all the way down?
Either that or they'll just, you know, get frozen and they'll freeze all the way to, you know, to the top of the surface.
So just cut them to where the pot is.
Right.
But if I bring them in and put them in the basement, I don't have to cut them.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Sure. Yeah, you don't have to cut them, but they're not going to look good inside unless you have grow lights. But let's see. Let's get another call in. Let's go to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Mike. I'm having a little trouble with my impatiens starting them from seed. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I've tried different seeding medias, and I've put them in light. I've put them out of light. I keep them moist. I put them on a heat pad. I take them off a heat pad. I've tried them a variety of ways, and I'm not doing any good, so I need your help.
Basically, I would say give up. Impatiens are not certain things are not easy to grow from seed, and impatiens is one of those particular plants.
Is it?
Yeah. So even though you got sounds like you got everything exactly as you need, you got the potting mix for starting plant material, you're taking care of them, and it's just not, you know, give up.
All right. Well, thank you for your advice.
I mean, I don't want to be cruel or mean or anything, but certain things are just, like I said, just really tough to grow from seed. So, and impatiens.
How do they grow them then commercially? How do they have so much success with them?
Well, I mean, they've got a different type of environment. They've got, with the lighting, and even though you're got the bottom heat, you got the light and everything else, it's just sort of a difference. Let's say a different circumstance. And you can't, as a homeowner, to duplicate what a professional greenhouse is going to do is going to be very difficult.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'm not such a bad gardener after all.
No, you're not.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Let's head over to Marcia's yard. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm not sure if I have a fungus problem in my yard or in my flower bed. My purple cone flowers, the petals are all turning black, and I noticed my banana plants, a lot of the new shoots that are coming up, they're turning black. So have you ever seen petals on the purple cone flowers turn black?
Are they you're talking about the petals right at the ground level, so the clump?
No, well, there are some black on the leaves, but on the petals themselves.
Oh, on the petals of the flowers. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's just, you know, it could be a little bit of a fungus problem, but I wouldn't be overly concerned with either one of those. So when you're watering, are you watering above, you know, let's say, what time of day are you watering when you do water?
In the morning, and I have, like, soaker hoses.
Well, that's the best thing to do. So you're not getting a lot of moisture on, you know, let's say the petals of the flowers or on the foliage or anything else. So you're doing everything, you know, that you could. So why you're having this circumstance is a little bit difficult to understand.
Is there something I can put in the dirt come spring for fungus?
No, not really. I mean, not from what, you know, not from the plants. Do you dig up your bananas and take them inside?
No, I cover them with insulation and I cut them down and then wrap them with insulation and then put chicken wire around them and fill it with leaves.
Okay. So, I mean, you're doing everything and you've had success with it. So it's just this particular year is, you know, causing the problems.
Yep. So I didn't know if there was something to put in the dirt. I was reading up on things, you know, and like you got to catch it with a spray early. Before, you know, the problem starts.
Right. And usually, the petals on the flowers, that's, you know, that's something that usually doesn't happen. So, again, it's just, and you're not overhead watering or anything like that, or you're not watering at the wrong time of day. And so why this is happening is just who knows.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Let's head over to Diana's yard. Hi, Diana.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Two things. When is the best time to plant? To buy and plant a crepe myrtle?
Spring is probably going to be the better time because that's when they're going to be most available at the garden centers, not because it's a better time to do it. And dividing it, I would say you're taking a big chance to do any kind of division on any kind of woody plant material. You know, crepe myrtle, that's exactly what it is. It's a shrub. So to split it apart, you're opening up wounds that may take a while to heal, and you could get some rot inside that. So I would consider not doing that and just getting another one as opposed to, you know, try to split one and transplant part of it away from the original area.
Okay, and what about elephant ears? Do I need to bring those in the fall?
They're not truly hardy. You know, some with the cannas and some of the elephant ears. I'm actually going to try to grow some elephant ears along between my house and Pam's house, who's my neighbor, and see what happens, because I've never really grown them and left them out over the wintertime because I want to see what happens. But there's a lot of houses in my neighborhood who have left cannas out for several years, and they've come back, you know, nicely. So it would just be a roll of the dice to see if they're going to come back for you.
And do I wait till there's a frost to dig them up, or?
No, you don't have to wait that long. I don't like to do that because once they get the frost on it, they get it, you know, the foliage gets kind of mushy. So when it starts, the days start getting shorter and shorter, then I just, you know, kind of routinely go out and, you know, I've got some in pots, some in the ground, and some in different places, and I just start digging them up. I don't have to wait till, let's say, the frost kills the foliage before I do that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Michael's yard. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. I have an area about 15 feet by 15 feet that was dug up by a utility company. Mm. And it's a mess. They brought up a lot of rock and a lot of clay. And what I'd like to do is prepare the soil properly and go down to a proper depth and then sod it. Two questions. What should I do to prepare it? And secondly, since it's so hot, I would certainly think that I'm not supposed to put sod down now, but can you put sod down in the fall?
Fall is ideal time to put sod down. So, yes, definitely you can do it then. As far as soil's preparation goes, I'd get rid of a bunch of the junk as much as you possibly can to a depth of about let's say 6 to 8 inches, and then get some topsoil compost mix or just some good quality topsoil and mix that in, and make sure you blend it in with the existing soil that's going to be still left, you know, after you go down, you know, 6 or 8 inches.
All right. Okay. And the fall, early fall, put it in and keep it watered, I guess?
Yeah, keep it watered, and you're talking about sod like bluegrass or fescue. You're not talking zoysia, right?
No zoysia.
Okay, so yeah, fall is, you know, a really good time to do it, and get the, you know, as soon as it kind of cools down a little bit, when you can get out there and get the soil prepared, that way, you know, get it done ahead of time, and that way if there's any sinking or anything, you can compensate for that, and then just put, you know, and then put the sod on top of it.
That's what I'm going to do. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Art's yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Mike, with your experience and any success, a 2-in-1, you dig one hole and you put different bulbs at different depths and then have one succeed the other with respect to the passage of time.
You're asking me? Like, I do that a lot. I plant tulips, let's say, and crocus in the same hole. So the
At different depths.
Yes. The tulips go down about 4 to 6 inches. The crocus go down about 2 inches.
What about fall blooming crocuses?
As far as growing them?
As far as planting and observing the propagation of the leaves.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the blooms on the fall crocuses
right
before you get the leaves.
Well, I mean, that's kind of happens in the springtime, too. The crocus flowers could come up, and then the foliage could start emerging after that.
You know, I hear you talk bulbs and tubers, but never tell people about the corms.
Well, that's true. It's just corms is something that sounds a little bit abstract, but that's just a different type of bulb as opposed to a tuber or a regular bulb.
Well, let me tell you, 10% of organic matter in your lawn will help your doggone soil moisture to be passed on down to the microbes.
You're absolutely right.
So you're missing out. You got to have more compost.
Well, that's why I say after you core aerate, then you put compost down.
Right. You got to have that microbe plant food there. Thank you.
All All right. Thanks, Art. And now let's head over to Jones. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I live in Glendale, and we have a terrible situation. Our 50 to 150-year-old oak trees have what one tree guy said was a virus and an arborist said it was a fungus. They've been losing clumps of leaves. They die off in the tree, and then the clump falls down to the ground.
Right.
And they're saying that there's nothing that we can do about losing these tens of trees that are in really prominent part of our landscape and shade.
They're exactly right. And, you know, to be honest with you, an age factor is, you know, there. We don't, you're not going to see too many trees that are, you know, older than that. It's just that they basically, they're having these problems just because they're not healthy and vigorous. And this is, there's nothing you can do with the older trees.
Okay. How long will it last? How long will the trees last?
It's just a roll.
Is it like one season or?
No. It's going to take a while. They're not going to die just all at once. So it's going to be a slow process. So thanks, Joan. Thanks to everybody for calling in. Greatly appreciated. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.